We ask for this meeting to come the department joins us at 10:30. But we wanted to meet at 10 o'clock because we've got a few things that we just have not been able to get out of the way in the past 2 weeks. We've got two sets of minutes. Members know that the regulations, we were briefed on them. I know Mr. Sell and Mr. Doble, for instance, were not there. We'll just talk to it very briefly and how we propose taking that forward. And two sets of minutes, I think they are. And hopefully by then the department will have joined us, but at least we would have done the in-house or committee work. So I'm hoping that members are comfortable with that approach. It shouldn't take us very long. Members have had minutes for a while. And the department will join us shortly, and we will then get into the business of the Dali Commission. So could I ask members, we've got minutes of the 15, hoping members have them. And the minutes of the 24th. Members, got those sets of minutes? Thank you very much. If we then can very quickly start with the 24th minutes while Cindy is getting me the 15th minutes, I'll just cut them. Thank you very much. Anybody have any changes on page number one? Page number two? Block say number three? Yes, sir.
On paragraph 229 of vetting of the officials, I just wonder if that line is correct to be put like that. The fourth line, which starts by NIA, also suffers its own capacity constraint. Should we put it like that? I don't know. It sounds as if we are taking another department. I don't know. Can we find another way of putting it?
No, it's fine. Can we say experience there? Because it is true that NIA has got capacity constraints. Instead of suffer, can we substitute the word suffer for the National Intelligence Agency also experiences its own capacity constraints?
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Page number five. Page number six. Seven. Page eight. Page 9. Page number 10. Can we have somebody move that the minutes? Thank you, Mr. Zobu. Anybody else seconding that for us? Thank you, Mangwenya. And matters in these minutes are ongoing, members. None of them are standalone, so we continuously follow up with the department on those matters, and we'll continue to do so. Can we then move to the minutes of the 24th in room number 3, 90 Plain Street? That was our interaction with stakeholders in preparation for today's meeting. Are there any corrections on page number 1? Page number 2? Page number 3? Page number 9. Page 10. And page 11. Baranki, move us. Thanks, Mr. Sell. Advocates, thank you very much. We're up to date with our minutes, except for minutes of last week.
That's fine. It's just, when you, on page 10, I've got a summary of recommendations. A lot of those things say that the department's going to get feedback today on those matters. But on the agenda, it just says the department's briefing us on Jarvie. Now, what is the department coming to brief us on?
On exactly that. The department is going to come and inform us on what is it that they have done in terms of the Jarlie Commission reports and its recommendations. They will do that. Having done that, we will then be afforded an opportunity to raise matters that they have raised directly and other matters that they might not have raised. So we'll be closing the entire gap. So if they cover these matters, well and good. If they do not cover them, we will then be able to ask it, because I felt that it would not be achievable for them to give us everything the way the report was speaking. They must give us what they think. We will see the gaps. We will raise those gaps and take it from there. So if there are matters that they've not covered but are Dali Commission related, we will be at liberty to raise them. Okay? And then we'll take it forward from there. Yeah, and Cindy says she has reminded them of matters that were here, so hopefully they will, in their own presentation, cover those matters as well. That deals with the minutes. If we just go to the regulations, members will recall that the regulations are the prerogative of the department and the minister after we had given them our views, but we specifically wanted them to come back to us on the regulations that pertained to medical parole and for us to approve them. They took us through those last week, I've asked Cindy to draft a report, which she says will probably be ready in the next day or two, around our views around the medical parole regulation, and then for us to formally adopt them, because that's what we asked for. And those would be 29A and 29B. I'm hoping that members have had sight of them. We are just requesting members, if you've got any views, maybe you can say them briefly now, otherwise give them to Cindy. I mean, in the meeting, nobody indicated anything, or we didn't have difficulties with what was there. We sort of thought it was what they were asked to do. But if members feel that there might be a comma missing somewhere or a word somewhere, first of all, we could discuss it now. Otherwise, Cindy will prepare a report, a very brief report, saying that we've looked at it, we are happy with the formulation of that regulation, 29A and 29B, and concluded the matter. I'm not sure if members have looked at them in the past. If not, can we ask members to have a look at them? And if you have any comments, to forward those comments to Cindy. But in the main, the committee felt that they indeed covered the areas of concern. And Cindy's report, unless somebody comes with something different, will be reflecting that. And hopefully at our next meeting, we'll be able to formally adopt it as a committee. But we have been briefed on that. The final matter that we thought we want to discuss with you is the third term report, the remainder of the third term report. Because there have been some changes. Today is the Dali Commission. Next week, Tuesday, we want to talk to the stakeholders around the seven-day establishment and whether it is working for us or not working for us. We've invited the unions to come and talk to us. Members are aware that we've not been able to tie this matter down. Department has certain views, we pick up certain observations when we get there, so we've asked the unions to brief us on Tuesday at 10 o'clock around their perception of the 7 days and whether it's working or not. The next day, we'd ask the department to come and talk to us, one, on the whole parole regime, the parole boards and the training, because as members are aware that there is no consistency in terms of the rulings that they make. The CMCs and whether they are ready to assist in that regard, and also then for the department to talk to us on the seven-day establishment. Having heard from the organized labor on the Tuesday, on Wednesday, we want to conclude this matter with the department in terms of what we think the impact of the seven-day establishment is and if there is a need for us to relook at it. On the 20th, we've asked stakeholders to come and talk to us around torture. Members again will recall that we, in our correctional matters amendment, have implored the Department of Justice and other stakeholders to finalize the whole issue around torture in our prisons in South Africa. We've asked stakeholders, Human Rights Commission, the Judicial Inspectorate, CSPRI, and one or two others that Cindy was approached with yesterday to come and talk to us around the torture matter from a stakeholder point of view. But we will have at least four or five civil society organizations come and talk to us around their views on torture in ourselves. And on the next day, we will be meeting with the NCCS. and understand what is it that they're doing, what are their functions. And we also heard from the minister yesterday that the NCCS have been tasked with helping train the parole board, so we just find out exactly what they're doing. And of course then talk to the department around the torture in our facilities, having had the opportunity of input from stakeholders the day before. That's our program, ladies and gentlemen, for September. Any comments, Mr. Tao?
Chair, I think all of those things are very, very useful indeed. I would like to put something on the long-range agenda for the consideration of the committee, and that is that if you look at the presentation that the department is due to give us today on page 13, they say that the department is continuously in consultation with NGOs with a view to expanding their scope of involvement in the implementation of rehabilitation programs in correctional centres. Well, quite frankly, there's a credibility gap there, which I intend to raise with the department in due course. But I would like to suggest that some of the foremost NGOs that are involved in rehabilitative programs at correctional centres be invited to come here to tell us what their opportunities and frustrations are in terms of delivering the sort of services that they want to deliver at correctional centre level.
All right, there's the proposal, Ngwenya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I agree with Mr. Sims. All I want to say now is that in this program of September, we need to look at our oversight also, as we have been agreed that we need this month to go back and make sure that whatever that we're promised that is going to be done by this month is happening. Thank you. Me and Yabona.
Any more proposals? We'll talk to them quickly. Let's talk to the first one, Mr. Self. I think there's agreement. We will find the Cindy and craft it so that people understand that it's not about us giving them jobs, but for us to at least be able to say these are the opportunities for partnership, because everybody's talking about partnerships. We'll find a way of having some sort of a public discourse around that one. We will do that, Cindy, I think so. Yeah. And then the oversight, we had said September at the time, Mum Gwenya, but September's tight. I've just been talking to Cindy. We will do that as soon as possible in October. Both yourself and Advocate Max around the admin, HR, and Baba Ndlovu, Sele, and somebody else around the infrastructure at St. Albans, and maybe Amtata. But we will find space for that. It won't be the whole committee, but dedications will go, even if it means overnight or in and out. We will therefore adopt this as what we're going to do until we go on recess, and then we will factor in those two proposals for the October to December quarter. All right? Thank you very much. The department is there. I think we have done our business, so we can allow them in. You've got 2 or 3 minutes to do whatever until the department comes in, but we are ready to receive them. Want to welcome the department, Commissioner, and your delegation. Also to our friends from the media, NGOs, interested parties, everybody, welcome. We have one agenda item today, and it really is to understand from the department what it is that they have done, if anything, around the recommendations of the Dali Commission. Members and everybody else will know that Dali Commission's report was finalized around about 2005. But it's also important to indicate that the nature of the recommendations were such that it's not a matter of addressing it and it's been completed immediately. For instance, something like the anti-gang strategy will be with us for a long time. So we don't expect the department to say to us that we have implemented it and it is now something of the past, because that's not what it is, but at least for the department to say these are the steps that we have taken and these are the steps that we're continuously taking around those matters. Other matters are short term and could have been concluded. Others we accept will be with us as long as we are around. We just wanted to have a sense of what is happening in the department. 2005 and 2011 are literally two departments. You can't compare them in terms of the state of the department. We accept that as a committee that there has been improvement, but our job is to ensure that this improvement is sustained and that it never falls off the radar, some of the recommendations that are there. We are going to ask you, Commissioner, and your department to do the initial presentation that we've received. We'll then open it up to members to engage around the specifics that you've spoken about and maybe one or two areas that the members feel are still prevalent within our facilities, because we do regular oversight that might have a bearing on the Dali Commission. So we will allow you an opportunity to brief us. Thereafter, the Portfolio Committee will engage on your briefing and on any other gaps. And hopefully when we leave here, we are able to say that these matters are receiving an acceptable level of attention and focus. And if there are areas that we think you're not doing that, we will raise that. The intention really, I think, with the Dali Commission report was to get this department to a better state. The Minister and the Commissioner have continuously said to us that their major task is to get us to this better state. The Portfolio Committee, when it met for the first time in this Parliament, also with its six or seven pillar approach, looked at corruption, looked at financial mismanagement, looked at rehabilitation and all those things as what we will do before the end of our term. So I think we're all on the same page. It's just on making sure that we don't lose sight of it. That's really the objective of our meeting. We don't want to belabor this thing for too long. It is just past 10:30. We want to be out of here at the latest by 12:30, 1:00 at the absolute latest. So if we give you an hour, Commissioner, that is up to about 11:30 to do your thing. It means we can engage from 11:30 to about 12:30. I'm sure that's acceptable with members. If needs be, we can go longer, but at the absolute latest, you have got 60 minutes to brief us on what it is that you've done since 2005. And we will stop you at 11:30 and then allow for the committee to engage. But if you do it before that, all the better. Commissioner, thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, I would like to thank your committee for giving us this opportunity to do this presentation, which is like an albatross on our neck. Firstly, I would like to indicate that the presentation we are going to do today
is a presentation which we'd like to have closure on. Closure because the Jali Commission took place 10 years ago. And it is this administration that is in a leadership capacity that would not like to be followed by events that happened in the past which perhaps were not adequately addressed. It is my understanding that two previous presentations have been done to this portfolio committee. But the issue that I would like to cross and linger upon is who is in charge in the Department of Correctional Services. Because the Jali Commission, in its assessment and investigation, seeks to want to address and find out as to what is happening in that organization and how we address the issues that were elevated to a point wherein this report became a matter of public consumption. I would like to stress that we are in charge. And having taken leadership position, we have committed ourselves to deal with some of the problems that have existed, but would like to ask the committee to forgive us if we are unable to respond to some of the issues, because institutional memory in this organization has elapsed, because some people have left. We have amongst us colleagues who have been partly part of the commission and investigation, Commissioner Modise, who was the RC in the organization. We have Paxton, Carol Paxton, code enforcement. We have other commissioners present here who will be able to assist us to meander through this difficult chapter in the organization. In 2005, the recommendations became pivotal in the department to redress and address some of the problems that we have. We would like to address ourselves to the stakeholders of the department and the media. Before April 1994, the Department of Correctional Services was run according to military structures, principles, and even though there was isolated incidents of corruption and fraud, it was not rife, and the department was calm under control of expected under military conditions, because then we had command and control. On the 1st of April 1996, the then minister demilitarized the Department of Correctional Services without putting any structure or system in place to replace the military structure that was there. Mr. Brain resigned during the course of that year, and Mr. Story was appointed in November 1996. The manner in which the demilitarization was implemented led to a relative vacuum in the command structure in the Department of Correctional Services for a period of 5 years. I want us to take note of that. For a period of 5 years, there was no structure, there was no command, there was no leadership. During which the labor unions utilized the opportunity to put forward their own agenda. Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, what I'm going to say here are issues that happened in 2001 and the period under review. It does not reflect the current scenario. Simultaneously, both crew engaged in their various operations, an operation which was codenamed Operation Quiet Storm, Operation Tula, and Namakutula, to effectively control DCS by getting their own people in critical posts, especially in senior management positions, corporate services, and head of the contractional centers. This led to chaos in DCS with no processes and structures, and as the Jali Commission put it, open quote, total lawlessness raging through Department of Correctional Services, close quote. In this context, therefore, various other challenges that are inherent to all other correctional centers escalated to crippling proportions. These are gangsterism. The issue of gangsterism has always been in the Department of Correctional Services, rather, but gangs are quick to capitalize on the circumstances, and the period between 1996 to 2001 was the ideal platform to start taking control over certain correctional centers, especially because there was little or no control of the centers. The main centers in this regard were the eight management areas that the DCS later identified to include in the terms of reference of the commission that is under review. This situation had led to a breakdown of security, with a level of escape reaching unprecedented levels. This resulted in the news that Scotland dropped in a zero tolerance to escapes in 2000, with clear reduction targets being set and serious disciplinary and performance assessment consequences for heads of centers where escapes had taken place. It also resulted in fraud and corruption inherent in criminal justice systems reaching unprecedented levels, both in relation to employment solutions and supply chain management areas. Nepotism became the order of the day, and abuse of power is also a constant risk in a closed security institution where command authority is at play. And the context of the mid-90s resulted in this abuse of power also getting out of control. Chairperson and honorable members, in 2001, Minister of Ben Kosana announced in Parliament that he had requested State President to establish a commission of inquiry into the corruption that was prevalent and inherent in the Department of Correctional Services. It is important to note that at that stage, Mr. Sitwalo was no longer the National Commissioner after he had resigned in 1999. From 1999 to 2001, the department was briefly led by Reverend Mbete and Mr. Tim Mumalo, who both left the department after their short tenures as National Commissioners. And later, Mr. Shivasa was acting National Commissioner. If we take this into stock, it means therefore there was no permanent leadership at the helm of this organization. This also contributed immensely to the instability of the department that was duly misused by all groupings to further their own agendas. Mr. Ntiwu took the reins of leadership and command in 2001 and served for a period of 5 years, made all possible to establish leadership and stability for the first time since 1996. I should think it is important for us to take note of this, that the period between December 2006 and May 2010 was also a period of leadership instability, with two acting commissioners, one for 5 months and the other for 10 months, and two permanent commissioners, one for 18 months and one for 9 months, and this third in the 3.5 years period. The appointment of a permanent national commissioner and that of the CFO in May 2010 provides a landmark for the basis of re-establishing stability and leadership in the department. We hope and trust we are up to that ability and task. The General Commission was established to investigate DCS as a whole, but also to focus on 8 management areas that were identified. It is also important to indicate that the General Commission requested the Special Investigating Unit to join them, but the SIU opted to partner with DCS management, and DCS took up the cleaning of the department in management areas beyond the 8 that were identified to cover all correctional centers. With the assistance of the SIU, in partnership with DCS own capacity created in 2003, the DIU and code enforcement were also established. It is important, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, to know that the Department of Correctional Services already signed a contract with SIU in October 2004 for a period of 3 years. More than 3 years before the General Commission handed over the final report on DCS in 2005 and indicated the following, that one, DCS requested SIU assistance that we primarily look into the response of the General Commission responses, that the SIU focus on medical aid and corruption in prison, concerns regarding correctional centers, corruption in correctional centers, non-reporting structure to expose corruption, concerns about lack of integrity amongst officials, abuse of power, and abuse of medical aid schemes. These had a negative implication on the image and the perception by the public on DCS. The Department of Correctional Services already adopted an anti-corruption strategy in 2002, in line with the Cabinet decision. The anti-corruption strategy, together with the Cabinet decision that all departments must have a minimum anti-corruption strategy, led to the creation of the Department Investigation Unit and Code Enforcement in 2005. Section 95 of the Correctional Services Act was further amended in 2008 to ensure the establishment of two units is entrenched in legislation. The anti-corruption strategy identifies a three-pronged strategy. One, prevention, investigation, and sanction. Within all of these, the importance of tight management and supervisory control was emphasized. This was 3 years before the final report was received from the Jali Commission. It must be noted that the number of allegations against individuals that were raised in the Jali Commissions were not adequately backed up by evidence to enable speedy disciplinary process against those named in the report. There were a number of officials who were investigated by the department on the basis of the allegations that were raised in the Commission's hearing, but it was found that there was insufficient evidence for disciplinary steps to be taken against them. When the investigation could establish substantial disciplinary steps were taken, these were taken indeed, and measures were taken against them. Some of the managers who were named in the report have now, a decade later, the events around which they were named have taken place, have already turned the corner and committed themselves to effective participation in the transformation of the Department of Correctional Services. The organizational culture of DCS and the ideal correctional official was raised in the journal report, were already addressed in the white paper on correction, and policies as reflected below. I quote, Chapter 8 of the white paper deals with an ideal correctional officer within the appropriate organizational culture. DCS Code of Conduct is one, Resolution 1 of 2006, which deals with disciplinary code of conduct, which replaced the Resolution 1 of 2001, was extensively debated during 2004-2005 financial year, but only accepted within DCS Bargaining Council in January 2006. Of course, on ethics development in conjunction with SAMDI, all staff members were required to undergo this course. Insignia and dress code were put back into the organization, and we implemented a junior, middle, and senior management training courses in 2007 where organizational culture and ethics were pertinently addressed. Chairperson, in order for us to be able to do our presentation within the time frames that were given to us, I would like to quickly browse through the following. During the course of the Jali Commission, the department received various interim reports relating to disciplinary matters, and these were acted upon immediately and, when necessary, referred to the police. On receipt of the final Jali report, the department put in place a national task team to study the report and to develop a comprehensive and implementation strategy. This implementation plan was reported by all relevant CDCs and RCs on a monthly basis until the final report on the implementation plan was submitted to the National Commissioner, who is myself, in 2010. I must have said here strongly that the department has systematically engaged with the implementation and recommendation of the Jali Commission. The monitoring system that was put in place in the implementation of these findings will be replicated for all major reports, such as the Ministerial Task Team and the Inspecting Judge report. I would like to emphasize, however, that in our endeavor and interaction with the other stakeholders, DCS management will at all times apply our minds to the recommendations for external bodies and determine the leadership of our minister what should and should not be implemented. Let me lift up an example. The department does not agree with the Jali Commission's recommendation in relation to super maximum correctional centers. While we note, and have addressed and will continue to monitor and address the issues of the human rights of offenders housed in super max centers, we believe that the nature of certain categories of offenders and given their behavioral problems manifest by certain offenders, the super max correctional centers are a necessary weapon in the arsenal in our command. In conclusion, it must be noted that corruption, escapes, gangs, assaults, abuse of power are inherent in all correctional services across the world, given the nature of the institutions of prisons. The challenge, however, is that we would like to change correctional services to adhere to the principles and the mandate for which it was established, to become a correctional services wherein we take our offenders into our mandate and be able to rehabilitate them. The challenge of Philippines Correctional Services managers is to reduce the risk of these activities to a minimum and to share effective investigation and sanction where they do occur. Chairperson, I want to emphasize to your committee, in this administration, in this leadership, where issues are raised with us of indiscipline, ill-discipline, we have not hesitated to take decisions. It is that important that the portfolio committee understands that the fact that gangs, corruption, escapes, assaults, abuse of power still do occur in DCS, these are relatively isolated cases and not to the magnitude as they were reported in the Jali Commission, and are not in the same systematic mismanagement that we have seen in the past in those eight management areas. The SIU investigation of all other correctional centers, while identifying a number of problems, did not indicate that the situation in the eight management areas investigated by the Jali Commission was replicated in all centers. I conclude by giving the portfolio committee and the honorable members the assurance that while the department has current challenges, as outlined in our annual performance plan and as identified in our briefings to the portfolio committees and in our oversight visits, the current state of DCS is incomparable with the period that was investigated by the Jali Commission. And the current management, which I lead, is firmly in control of the department and committed to deepening the transformation and correctional services agenda. The emphasis of this administration on compliance and accountability of managers will ensure that the situation goes from strength to strength, and then we have a better administration and leadership. Moreover, in conclusion, by indicating to this august organization, which provides oversight to us, we are aware that there are things that might not be within our range, which you might not be able to sustain in the manner that you deserve, you want us to do. We'd like to indicate us to yourself that we are committed in addressing most and major issues that are listed in the Jali Commission. And we want to indicate where we have failed or unable to provide such, that this will be brought to your attention and try and address them. And we'll indicate to yourself that these are firmly embedded in the strategies, performance indicators, and job functions in the department. It is our hope, therefore, that from today's briefing, the focus will move to the implementation of our annual performance plan that builds on the work done during and after the Jali Commission. I thank you. I will therefore, with your indulgence, Chairperson, give a high-level presentation on the slide, which will capture the essence of the issues that were listed in the Jali Commission, so that we can engage, and as I indicated, this leadership team would be able to focus their energy on the work at hand. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, honourable members, to continue then to the high-level presentation of the Jali Commission implementation in the department. Let's just reflect, if we can move to the first slide. The process of the Commission's work was concluded between February of 2002 and May of 2005. The Jali Commission appointed in 2001 to investigate issues that had been identified by the then Minister Skosana in those eight management areas: Durban, Pietermaritzburg, Norme, Pretoria, Johannesburg, Leeuwarden, Paulsmoor, St. Albans, and Bloemfontein. The structure of the report is a five-volume report, Volume 1 dealing with the systems and policies, Volume 2 dealing with misconduct that had not already been submitted to the department in interim reports, and then Volumes 3 to 5 are the misconduct issues that were received by the department in interim reports. The Jali Commission had deemed it appropriate that where there were issues that had surfaced that required immediate attention in the form of misconduct allegations, that those should be provided us to as interim reports going forward. When we received from the Office of the President in December 2005 the full Jali Commission report, what we did was to establish a departmental task team to analyse and summarise the report for management and, in fact, to develop an implementation plan. The analysis of the report followed, in a sense, the three substructures of the Jali Commission: the first dealing with systems and policies, the second was the misconduct matters that had already been reported to the 11 interim reports, and the last area was the misconduct matters that had not been submitted in the interim report. Further actions that emanated from that task team was the establishment then of a centralized departmental task team to deal with the outstanding disciplinary cases. The establishment of national branch task teams to deal with the finalizing of the issues in relation to systems and policies, those recommendations that required the attention of the national branches in the head office. And then a process of ensuring that there were quarterly reports going through to the Office of the Commissioner and the Minister on the progress of dealing with the matter. A letter was also forwarded to the President to provide feedback on the matter at appropriate times. Effectively, this matter had been prioritized as a project for reporting in terms of the government program of action, so that it was lifted up at that stage as well.
I'm not Ruth Jefferson. I want to be... we don't have that document. And if we are told that is the background, we will understand, but we don't have that document in front of us. And we are trying to follow what she's saying, and we are left behind. Can we be helped or something like that?
Chairperson, apologies, let me indicate. We did submit a presentation to the Portfolio Committee in June. We have added to it for purposes of today three background slides. So from the next slide, we should be getting to the presentation that has been provided to the Portfolio Committee in June. Remembering that this session was in fact scheduled for, I think, the 22nd of June, and we have provided a presentation at that stage. Perhaps if we are comfortable with that, I can go forward on that basis. I don't know whether it means that people who are not, that we may need to have copies provided to people who would not have received it at that time in June.
Members have the document that you talk about in June. Are you saying that there were only three slides that were different to what we have? If that's the case, it's fine. We will try and live with those three slides on condition that going forward, everything else is what members have received, because that's what we've been working on in terms of our preparation. So if it's a matter of only two or three slides, I think let's bear with them on those, because those are updates, but then we will raise this matter if going forward it's still not what it is.
Chairperson, there are three slides, and the slide dealing with the Medcor fraud, we've updated our figures, because that is obviously an issue that month by month the figures change. Those are the only changes. Our reason for it bringing in the three slides was that we felt that we needed to contextualize the work that the department had done on the Jardy Commission so that the Portfolio Committee had a real understanding of the documentation. So apologies for us not making those extra three slides available.
So just before you carry on, Ms. Reiner, I'm assuming that all members have got this document that we're talking about. Okay, so hopefully in the next minute or two, this document should be aligned to what is being presented by the department. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay, so if we can move to the next slide. What we have mapped out in those three slides is the process that led to the report that has been made available to the Portfolio Committee yesterday, the Section A and the Section B, in which we have summarized in the first column our summary of the findings of the Jolly Commission. The second column then deals with the work that we have done to implement the findings, and the last column links the work that we've done to our current strategic plan. So that the product of that task team and the work by branches is in fact in the report that we had deemed we would provide to you yesterday. That's the report that had been tracked through the department. Moving then to the background of the anti-corruption strategy in DCS, which is now moving to the presentation as we had provided to you in June. Let me move immediately to the fact that while the Jolly Commission was appointed in 2001 and started its work in February of 2002, at the same time there was a process within the department of ensuring that we embarked on a strategic turnaround that was initiated from the appointment of the Commissioner in 2001. So we had, in a sense, parallel processes that took place alongside the Jani Commission, and you'll see in the report that we distributed to you yesterday that there are a number of points at which work that had been going parallel to the Jani Commission then coincided with the recommendations of the Jani Commission. One of those being the anti-corruption strategy, which was developed in 2002-03 and taken through to Cabinet and approved in Cabinet. A three-pronged approach, one focusing on prevention, with a very strong emphasis there on ethics training, on what ultimately became the ideal correctional official that the Commission has referred to, but also ensuring that our management systems were sufficiently tight to prevent corruption and fraud as much as it is possible. The second leg being the detection processes, and that's where the establishment of our Departmental Investigation Unit and our Code Enforcement Unit was set up. And the third leg, obviously, is the sanctioning element of ensuring that what is detected and investigated goes through to disciplinary processes and, where relevant, criminal processes. That three-pronged approach was in line with the Cabinet decision of 2003 and our establishment of the DIU and the Code Enforcement coincided with that decision to establish a minimum anti-corruption capacity. The work that we have done since then through, I think, has been recognised by DCSA in relation to its audit on DCS in relation to fighting corruption, that we have made significant gains and are the third best in the department in 2010 in relation to that. That, again, does not mean that corruption is eradicated. I'm sure people who have been on the Portfolio Committee before will recognize this slide, but I'm not going to speak to it in any detail, but it just maps out the various elements of our anti-corruption strategy, aiming to ensure that there's a consistent anti-corruption awareness within the department. It combines ethics training, it combines communication strategies, but along with investigation and sanction and along with internal control, the whistleblowing policy, the obligation to report corruption, the process of ensuring that we are improving on our vetting of personnel, the fraud prevention plan. All of those are elements that you'll see in the report that we distributed to you yesterday are picked up and flagged against the Jani Commission recommendation in that report. We can move to the next slide. This slide just speaks to the creation of the DIU and the code enforcement capacity within the department, the mandate of those components in terms of our Correctional Services Act, and our process of capacitating it. At the time that the Jani Commission was set up, they had approached the SIU to work with them. The SIU then entered into a partnership with the department to ensure that they worked with us to put management on a better basis to be able to manage corruption within the department or down-manage corruption within the department. And in fact, that agreement led to an agreement around the staffing of the DIU. So when we did establish the DIU, we had capacity that came from the SIU, from Scorpions and from SAP into those agencies. The integrity desk of that also then in 2007, with Cabinet's decision to form a vetting fieldwork unit, was escalated to become a vetting fieldwork unit to ensure the vetting of officials within our department. In terms of policies and procedures in relation to the anti-corruption strategy, in the period 2004-05, we developed an anti-corruption policy, the whistleblowing policy, the anti-fraud policy, and the prevention plan, and the vetting policy, and moved then to focus on an anti-corruption awareness, part of which was the dissemination and publicising of those policies, part of which was an ethics training program developed with Sundi, rolled out in 2005-06 to SMS members, NMS, and thereafter a process of training trainers, so that there's a constant process of ethics training taking place within the department. We also went through in 2004 a process of ensuring anti-corruption and fraud prevention workshops within all of the regions to ensure that there was a heightened awareness of those policies, the procedures and the ethics. The training of chairpersons by code enforcement since 2004 has aimed to ensure consistency in hearing. One of the elements that had been raised up was that within disciplinary processes there was inconsistency in terms of the way in which they were dealt with. So there was an intensive training process in 2004, but it's also been a process that is now taken forward on a sustained basis. The code of conduct was developed in line with the Public Service Code of Conduct and implemented. All officials have signed that and it's part of the basic training. It also forms part of the awareness campaign. it was a process at the time that we adopted it, where there was an awareness process. It was also something that 2 years ago, I think, we again had a process of ensuring that all officials signed the code of conduct. The minimum information security standard was also implemented. The security standards directorate, which is now part of the National Commissioner's office, has also taken forward the process of ensuring that the protection of information and security is taken forward, along with physical security and access security. Corruption prevention and sanction also resulted in us having to review our disciplinary code. Resolution 1 of 2006 was a new resolution on the handling of disciplinary matters within DCS, based on the issues that had come out of both public service interventions but also our own learning from having established an anti-corruption strategy and ensuring that our disciplinary code addressed those issues more effectively than the previous one. We also have introduced a risk management process that meets quarterly to oversee and progress on mitigation of risk and involves an annual risk assessment process that enables us to identify risks within our environment. That risk management committee receives regular reports on fraud prevention and corruption prevention from the fraud prevention committee. The internal controls have been put in place in terms of the management of merit awards in line with the procedure manual on performance assessment. That process is mapped out in the report that we have provided to you, what the internal controls are that have been put in place in relation to that. In terms of the implementation of recommendations on the misconduct matters, we embarked on a process of analysing the various different cases, and I think that there are important elements there for the Portfolio Committee to understand. We've indicated that we established a centralised team of 20 members that we drew from the different regions to process those misconduct matters, and all of the disciplinary cases were completed in February of 2008. But there were particular challenges. Apart from the first just being the volume of the Jolly Commission reports and the transcriptions of the hearings and the exhibits, a massive amount of documentation that needed to be gone through. Effectively, what that team had to deal with was what evidence is indeed available in an evidentiary form. Where are witnesses still available? Remembering that a number of the issues that surfaced in the Jolly Commission report, in fact, were incidents that had taken place in the 1990s. So there is a time passage between when the events had taken place and when the disciplinary processes and investigations were being conducted. We needed to be able to identify where the members and witnesses were stationed, because there had been a significant transfer process, as is inherent in our department. But in addition, we also had to identify where further investigation was needed. In two senses. One, there were allegations that had been raised in the Jolly Commission which had not been subjected to a thorough and systematic investigation, and we needed to be able to do that. The second element was that our internal processes required us to ensure that we have an internal investigation. So we had to ensure that we were able to subject what has surfaced in the Jolly Commission to an investigation that would enable the disciplinary hearing process to continue and not to be seriously flawed. Our resolution 24 of 1997 states that the employer should finalise investigation within 14 days and finalise disciplinary hearings within 30 days. Now, clearly that in relation to the Jolly Commission process was absolutely not achievable. And that was part of what had fed into our review of the disciplinary code, because what we all have also recognised is that where you are dealing with corruption-related investigations as opposed to the normal line functional misconduct investigations, a 14-day time period may not be a feasible process. We deemed that the Jolly Commission hearings were exceptional, and that we in the process of the disciplinary cases, we had to rely on case law to be able to get condemnation for having not complied with those timelines. In the process of the hearings, we did face serious challenges of the non-availability of witnesses, people who had either died, had resigned from the department, or who had been released from the correctional system in terms of inmates. But finally, actions were taken against 106 officials as part of the implementation of that final report. The issue of Medcor fraud is an issue that surfaced in the Jolly Commission but also was then subjected to a further investigation process between the Scorpions, the SIU, and the department. Out of that investigation, there were 702 officials that were investigated, 419 officials admitted guilt and signed acknowledgement of debt. The amount of, and this is where for portfolio committee members, these figures may vary from the figures that you had in the June report because we have updated them. The amount of $2.5 million, I'm not going to go into the exact figures down to the last cent, was already paid over to DCS as part of the money recovered. As the officials are still paying on a monthly deduction process, further amounts are paid over to DCS as we go forward. The total amount from the acknowledgement of debts that have been signed amounts to a total of $7.5 million, of which nearly three million goes to CARA, $4.5 million ultimately will come to DCS, and that $2.5 million is part of that $4.5 million. The disciplinary hearings are currently pending against 15 officials who had chosen not to sign admission of guilt. The five other officials are also on sick leave for long periods of time. Those cases will be finalised as and when they are back on duty. 217 of those 702 officials had either resigned or had been pensioned off or deceased. And again, it's important to emphasise that the medical aid fraud that took place in this instance is again stuff that was historical back to the period of the 1990s. Criminal cases against the officials who didn't admit guilt were finalised and they have been found not guilty in the court, and the court judgment is awaited to be able to decide on further disciplinary action in relation to those. I'm not going to speak through this document in detail, but it gives you the total I'm advised that this, again, has been updated in the meantime from the June report. So if people can then look. I apologize, Chairperson. I'm being alerted to the fact that this slide is, in fact, not the accurate information. We will provide you during the course of this meeting with accurate information in relation to this. Can I speak then to the accurate information? In relation to the dismissal, the interim report related to 43 dismissals, final report 2 dismissals, Medcor 1, a total of 46. The slide that we are presenting has misadded that up. In terms of the warnings, from the interim report there were 18 warnings, from the final report there were 21 warnings, from Medcor there were 419. And that comes to a total of 458. The withdrawn cases...
Just before you get there, Ms. Fainer, what is your total at the bottom of that new one? Is it 902?
902.
Okay. That's the slide we have before. Right, carry on.
Okay. Do you want me to go through each of them so that you can verify? Okay. The withdrawn cases then are 26 withdrawn cases, 41 withdrawn cases from the final report, the 26 being from interim reports. Medcor withdrawn is 34 and a total of 101 withdrawn cases. The acquittals, no acquittals from the interim report, 10 acquittals from the final report, 1 from Medcor, and a total, therefore, of 11 acquittals. Dismissed for other matters, none from the interim report to the final report, 21 from Medcor, that giving a total of 21. Counselling. None from the interim report, 5 recommended from the final report, 5 counselling took place, and that is the total. None from the medical process. Resignations, there were 7 resignations that impacted on interim report disciplinary matters, 20 resignations that impacted on the final report misconduct matters, 39 that impacted on medical disciplinary matters, and therefore a total of 66 resignations in misconduct matters. In terms of people who've been pensioned, the figures are none on interim report, none on final report, 65 in relation to the medical misconduct matters. deceased officials, none in relation to interim reports, 7 in relation to the final report, 93 in relation to the medical report, giving a total of 100 of people who died and were impacted on the misconduct matters. Officials assigned an AOD and are paying, but not with a final written warning, are 8. That's relating to medical officials that signed the AOD but not yet implemented due to administrative matters. Those are the 5 that I referred to previously, 16 cases pending. That gives you a total of 94 misconduct matters in relation to the interim reports, 106 in relation to the final report, 702 in relation to medical, giving us a total of 902. And we apologize for the error on the slide. I'm then moving off the misconduct matters to reflect at a very high level the steps taken in relation to the systems and policy matters that the Jolly Commission had addressed, and the detail of which you will find in the document, the report on the implementation plan that we submitted yesterday. In relation to gangsterism, the need for an effective strategy had been identified in the White Paper on Corrections, and here I want to re-emphasize the fact that we've got parallel processes of strategic changes taking place in the department parallel to the Jolly Commission work. So at the stage at which we are getting the Jolly Commission report, the White Paper has already lifted up this issue. The draft anti-gang strategy and the draft information manual on gangsterism has been developed. The draft is ready for consultation. We have already implemented a gang management strategy as a process from 2010. The database of gang members is part of that strategy going forward. The policy does make provision for classification and separation of offenders regulated by a protection plan, which provides for the separation of different categories of offenders. In addition, the offender rehabilitation path provides for the profiling of offenders to enhance separation, and that separation in two senses. One, enabling us where we can identify gang members to be able to deal with them on that basis, but also to separate people who would be vulnerable to the gang activity. The involvement of officials in the promotion of gang activities is an issue that the department has embedded in our disciplinary processes. It is a serious offence, and it may lead to dismissal, but we do want to emphasize that our disciplinary process includes a due process, so it may lead to dismissal as a result of that due process. I think before I move off the anti-gang strategy, it is important to emphasize that this is an inherent part of our strategic plan and our ATP, and has been over a number of years, and it is an issue that we interact with the Portfolio Committee on in the form of our reports on our quarterly performance information. It is part of our current annual performance plan. Moving then to correctional centre security, again an issue that we did not wait until we received the Joint Commission report, but there are a number of initiatives that have spoken to and built on the issues that have surfaced in the Joint Commission. The part of it is the issue of ensuring that we utilise the installation of technology as well as the upgrading of our design of our centres. We have piloted inmate tracking as part of ensuring enhanced security. The offender rehabilitation path, balancing rehabilitation initiatives and security initiatives as two sides of the coin, also enable us to better categorise offenders and enhance security. We've also, through the minimum security standards adopted, I would think in 2005-06, but I may have the financial year slightly wrong, we have a 5-pillar approach to security, recognizing that no matter what technology you've brought on board, no matter what security information you're using, ultimately security is also a people-driven process. And so the training, the security training of our officials and the ensuring of our compliance with our security policy and procedures that has also been beefed up and reviewed during this period is a critically important part. There is a reward system in place both for offenders and officials in terms of contributing to the prevention of contraband going into our facilities or enhancing security within our facilities. In relation to the judicial inspectors, I think the Portfolio Committee has already interacted with the department in relation to this. It is an independent statutory body. It is not subject to DCS control. The expecting judge reports both to the President and to Parliament, and the liaison is between the Judicial Inspectorate and the Ministry. The IPVs are not sealed in investigation, but they certainly have played a role and will continue to play a role in terms of reporting corruption matters that then enable us to take the process of further investigation steps to be able to take the necessary disciplinary processes. The Act has, subsequent to the Joint Commission, been amended to capacitate the Judicial Inspectorate. The internal investigative capacity that we have established is in line with the Cabinet Directive in terms of minimum investigative capacity around anti-corruption within the department. In relation to overcrowding, again, a process that we were managing parallel to the Joint Commission. We had identified it as a JSPS priority from 2002. There was an interdepartmental cluster task team established. The work of that task team then fed through into the challenges of overcrowding being integrated into the integrated case flow management system that is still managed by the JSPS, both nationally and down to centre level. The work of the internal DCS task team on overcrowding, the national overcrowding task team, is monitored by the Risk Management Committee, and there are risk mitigation plans on overcrowding that are in place within all regions, within all management areas, and we are able to monitor that on a regular basis. It's also obviously one of our key performance indicators, and so we report on it also in our quarterly reports and in our annual reports. The remand detention project, which we took to Cabinet as a proposal of the project in 2006, and that resulted then in the 2009 Cabinet decision to set up a remand detention branch, and which has now cascaded through to the amendment of legislation, is also has elements that are aimed at addressing the challenge of overcrowding, particularly in relation to the length of time that people spend in remand detention and the issues of unpaid bail, and hence the bail protocol. On the overtime policy, a key issue that has been lifted up by the Jolly Commission, the shift to the seven-day working week has addressed the issue of the payment of overtime for outside of the extraordinary requirements of overtime. So the agreement with the recognized unions to phase in the seven-day establishment has been put in place, and it has addressed the issue of the overtime and the abuse of overtime that had been identified at that stage. We did employ three recruitment agencies to enable us to expedite the recruitment processes, and it is an issue that, again, as part of our current strategy to expedite recruitment and fill our vacancies, we are considering going a similar route of having recruitment agencies to be able to expedite our processes in relation to that. So overtime at the moment is managed in a responsible, acceptable manner, but it is not the same overtime that was in the department at the time. Overtime now is the extraordinary overtime that is required rather than overtime in order to ensure that we can manage institutions 24/7. In terms of procurement and logistics, the policies and procedures have been extensively reviewed to enhance internal controls. There has been an internal auditing and inspection process. We've developed a compliance improvement plan in 2005 that has been inspected in all regions and all management areas on an annual basis, and we have been reporting in our annual report on the level of compliance with that compliance improvement plan. The process between national office and the regional offices in relation to awareness around supply chain management processes has been a consistent process. And I think that it's also something that through the AG's reports and through our work on the action plans to address the AG's findings, we have also been addressing this systematically through that process. The internal control measures in specific management areas have also been put in place as recommended. On the issue of workshops, the policies and procedures have been reviewed to enhance internal control. The workshop computer system password has been protected, along with a broader focus on increased control over password utilization within the department, and our information, our IT security policies in that regard. The component is subjected to continued internal auditing and inspection. The monitoring and evaluation of visits conducted by the National Office have been a regular function of the management of workshops, and the general internal control measures that were recommended at specific management areas have been implemented. Chairperson, concluding and within the hour that you gave us, the commitment to implement the Joint Commission recommendations is a demonstration of effectively our commitment to enhance our management systems within the department to manage and improve our reputation and integrity, but also to ensure that there's a consistent stand against any form of corruption. The approach that we have followed in relation to medical fraud cases has had positive results in the form of protecting financial interests of the state and getting money coming back into the state. The current medical misconduct matters that relate to, that emanate from those investigations have been dealt with, as I indicated, by the Scorpions and the SIU and the department outside of the receipt of the final report. And I think that the final conclusion is that our anti-corruption mechanisms that we've put in place are effective. It's not to say that things don't fall through the cracks, but in comparison, and I think to re-emphasize what the Commissioner has said, qualitatively speaking, in terms of our ability to detect misconduct, be it fraud, corruption, be it serious non-compliance, be it mismanagement, and our commitment to be able to address them and our capacity to be able to address them, the department is in a fundamentally different situation from the situation when the Joint Commission was appointed in 2001 and even significantly progressed from where the department was when we received the final report in 2005. Chairperson, I hope with that we've been able to give you the high overview. The detail of what I've spoken to is covered in the report that we distributed, the Section A dealing with the systems and policies part, and the Section B dealing with the specific management areas that were the focus of the Joint Commission. I thank you.
Just before we engage, other than your disagreement with the Dali recommendations around the need for the CMAXs, are there any areas that Dali highlighted that you've been unable to implement? You don't have to. Because what I'm hearing now is that we've almost taken the Dali Commission recommendations and addressed all of them. Those that we disagreed with, you've indicated that, well, we disagree with the CMAX, and therefore, obviously, you're not going to follow those recommendations. My question is, are there any areas of this report that you just have been unable to implement? Are there any areas? Before we even open up, are there any areas, or are you saying to this committee that you've covered as much as is humanly possible? Are there any areas that you've not covered?
I think the one element that is flagged in the report that we distributed yesterday is in relation to the issues around the SMF members and the professional organisation, and that is part of the jurisdiction of the DPSA. So on that issue, it's not an issue that we have attended to. There's a recommendation that a professional association should be created for SMS members. And that is a process that rightly falls with DPSA. It is a process that at the time that we received the Joint Commission, DPSA was attending to. That is an issue that falls outside of our jurisdiction. I think the only other aspect that we need to flag very clearly for the Portfolio Committee is that there are misconduct issues that we have not been able to address because we have not been able to gather the evidence to be able to act on it. So there's that aspect. But the other element is that there are elements of the Jolly Commission, as I think you emphasized in your opening remarks and the Commissioner certainly spoke to, that you cannot say the gang management strategy is a closed issue. You cannot say that the issues of appropriate staffing levels is a closed issue. You cannot say that the issue of overcrowding is a closed issue. Those are issues that are inherent in our work with correctional services. But what we can confidently say is that we have addressed those issues either as a result of the Jolly Commission or parallel to and then enhanced by the Jolly Commission recommendation, and we will continue to. I think that that would be the response in relation to that.
Right, thank you. All right, let's open it up then for engagement. It is obvious 1 hour. Thank you very much, Ms. Reiner. I'll kick off with 3 while members still get their acts together. So the first one that I was going to raise, Commissioner, is this report talks about the conduct of senior officials. And if there's anything that we receive, is the abuse of power of senior officials. Males abusing their power in relation to junior females, sexual abuse. Every day we get it. Is the RC for Mpumalanga here? RC for Mpumalanga, do we have an RC in Mpumalanga?
Mm-hmm.
Or Limpopo, do we have somebody? Right? Yes, who is the person? Just turn around. Is it you? All right, ma'am. Let me... No, fine. I just wanted to find out. I'm saying to you this because you and Mr. Rafiroka are going to get a call from me in the next 14 days. Because we're going to do an unannounced visit in one of your facilities around this matter. I'm raising this because I'm not sure, Commissioner. I'm not sure, and you need to indicate this to us, Ms. Reiner. You know, it's one thing to comply. It's another thing about its competency. How competent is this DIU that we have? It's one thing to have it there. How competent is it? So Rasaroka and ma'am, you're going to get a call, honestly, unannounced on the morning, and you're going to go with me to this place in your region where we're going to address this matter. Because this is one area, Commissioner, that I really believe we are failing this matter. The abuse, by virtue of my rank, is one area that we are failing dismally. And unfortunately, the victims seem to be young females. I'm raising, when you respond to me, I'm raising that as an example. My question is, how effective is this DIU? Because you're saying, as a result of DALI, you implemented a DIU. And just to comply, but that DIU not doing what it's supposed to do is a problem. So that's the first area that I'd like you guys to talk to. The second area, Commissioner, is around the length of time that it takes for us to deal with the disciplinary matter. You emphasize it here again that ten officials admission, what is that, AOD? Admission of death, but not yet implemented. Now this report you sent to us in June. It is now September. And I'm sure that admission of death, if I had to ask you, would probably be last year or the year before. We've not implemented it, according to your own, due to outstanding admin matters. I was with the committee in Boksburg on the 27th of July. On the 27th of July, we were told that there's an official commissioner that was guilty of computer tampering. High-profile case of computer tampering.
That official was suspended on the 27th of July. I want to know today, what is the status of that official? And now these are examples of what I'm saying is that I'm not sure how much focus we're doing on these things. There's the 10 or the 13 that we are not deducting what is owed to the state because admin is slow. And I'm coupling that with the official in Boksburg who on the 27th of July was suspended according to that area or area commissioner. I just want to know now, 2 months later, what is the status? Is it still the same that he was suspended and he's still suspended or where it is? So that's the second area that I'm talking about is our inability to deal with matters that we picked up timeously. We understand that you said 14 days and 30 days might not be possible, but 3 months is too much. 3 months is too much. So if you guys can just make me understand, is it a lack of capacity in your department or is it an unwillingness of your officials? That's why I'm taking Rasa Roka as the area commissioner with me, so that we understand these things in a proper line. The final area that I'd want to talk about, you know, on page 47 of this document that you talked to Manshine, and this is this, you don't have to respond to it, but I'm just indicating it to you. On 27 of this big document, Dali recommended surveillance inside the cell. Because that's where abuse happens. Your response to that was, well, yeah, Mr. Dali, we hear what you're saying, but you know, it might be a problem because it infringes on all sorts of rights of the people. That's what you indicated. Now, that might be the case. I'm arguing here, and I'm going to put it into the public domain, that the interest of the abuse inside the cell must supersede the interest of the abuser. So this argument of not having surveillance inside the cell is an argument that I don't buy, and I'm prepared to fight that argument with every civil society body that chooses otherwise. Because those that are being abused, rights, are not being considered. But the abuser's rights are being considered. And your argument, Ms. Reiner, is that we disagree with it because the officials are expected to walk around and do all those things. So we know that we don't have sufficient officials. We know that. You've got 2 officials for 300 people in some of these facilities. So your theoretical answer doesn't satisfy me. That theoretical answer doesn't satisfy me. And I'm saying it to civil society now. I'm going to raise the debate of the interest of the abused inside the cell versus the interest of those that say their human rights or their, I don't know what you call it, privacy, is being trampled upon. I'm raising it, Ms. Reiner. You've got a position. I'm not saying change your position because that is the current policy, but I'm raising it so that you guys are aware of it. These are the concerns that certainly I do, and I think most members of the committee have. So I wanted to, by virtue of just giving you a context, raise those issues. You don't have to respond to any of them, but those are just overall issues. I will allow members then to get into the specifics if they want to get into the specifics that you can raise. I've noted Mr. Sell. I've noted Mam Gwenya. Oh, everybody wants to speak. That's fine. Just on my comments, very briefly, before we get into the details, do you want to comment on those very briefly? If not, we're going to get into members directly. If you don't want to, it's fine. We don't expect any responses. Those are opening remarks.
Chair, thanks for the opportunity. I should think we are not saying we are responding directly. We have taken note. Suffice to say, on the conduct of officials, especially on abuse of power, I should think we cannot keep silent on this one. It is important to contextualize to indicate that the prevalence of abuse of power in an organization of this size and magnitude has been the focus of this administration and leadership. But we must bear in mind that the organizational culture of this organization has to be taken on board. We are going through a process of organizational transformation, doing an audit and training of officials in the coalface of business. Because if you look at the white paper, it says there is a need for us to be able to produce an ideal correctional officer. And for us to be able to reach that particular plateau, it means that we have to take a significant number of officials through a process of training. But most importantly, what you're emphasizing upon is senior officials in this case. Now, it's a culture that we're combating at every level. And I must emphasize here that it does not make us feel good as and when officials make use of this authority that they have, that they're able to undermine those who report to them. The prevalence of sexual abuse in our institution is a cause for concern, and we're taking this with the concern that it deserves. I'm not saying here that we'll be able to solve this matter in the interim, but as and when this matter is raised with us, we take serious disciplinary processes on the matters on the table. But suffice to say that as we transverse and do this change within the organization, we'll find pockets of resistance where in this matter is not going to be easy. And bear in mind, if somebody is your senior and is subjected to this, and therefore you'll always tend to be silent, it's only very few. There has to be an educational campaign that it is correct to complain about sexual abuse or any abuse of power by senior officials. On the issue of surveillance itself, the Deputy Minister in the interaction and the meeting that we had with the Portfolio Committee last week did emphasize this matter. The issue of human rights, I agree with you. The people who are in our facilities have seriously infringed on the human rights of others. But it's a matter that has to be dealt from a political level, but I really agree with you that as Portfolio Committee, we seek guidance and support from yourself. Because we can also combat gangsterism themselves if we have capability of understanding what is happening inside the South. Until such time, and the public in particular, do not trample on the rights of the organization to be able to do its job appropriately, this matter will always be a problem for us. So we appreciate, Chairperson, that a debate in the public discourse should be created, because it is correct for us to know and be in charge, because when we ask the question, who is in charge, it presupposes that we are in charge both day and night. As we lock those inmates after hours, after lockdown, our officials are not inside the prison cell. They're in the corridor. As what happens in the corridor inside the cell, we cannot predict. And that's where abuse of inmates and torture and fighting amongst gangs takes place. On the length of time to dispose, I should think that we would like to leave open to for a discussion and engagement. But certainly we don't want to give an impression that we are lethargic to this matter. On that note, Chairperson, I should think we just wanted to make a comment on.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much. I've noted Mr. Self, followed by Ngwenya, then Abraham, Babandlovu, Nyanda, Max, and Kwele. And we've got just on an hour, so maybe 10 minutes per person if there's a follow-up. So you ask a question and maybe a follow-up, so that allows everybody to speak, otherwise it's in trouble. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks for the presentation, but I must confess that I have a problem because there always seems to be a disconnect between what is being described as a high-level presentation and the reality that we experience on the ground when we go on an oversight visit or when we talk to officials or when we talk to inmates. And it comes through on a variety of different levels in the report that you produced. So, for example, I mean, one talks about an inmate protection plan. I don't know where it's been implemented. I don't know whether it's been implemented in every correctional centre across all provinces. There's a gang management strategy. Well, you know, we all know that gangs exist, and the commissioner just said when the doors are locked, the gangs are in charge. Now, where's the gang management strategy after us in any one of our correctional centres, which can be from 4 o'clock in the afternoon until 7 o'clock the next morning?
staff, let's leave it there. Those are two very important ones. Let them respond because you might have a follow-up. Is there a gang management strategy and an inmate protection? That's the question you have to ask. Can they just respond that to you and your follow-up, sir?
Jefferson, I'd like to respond to the gang management strategy. We should also talk to inmate protection plan. The department has developed, Jefferson, a gang management framework that we have indicated as well needs to be discussed and consulted with all stakeholders. But what we are doing at this point in time is to have developed our own framework which we deal with gangs in our facilities. The strategy or the framework as we have compiled have been disseminated to all regions for regions to develop center-specific, region-specific strategies to deal with gangs. You'll find that gangs in the Western Cape are very different to the gangs in Gauteng. Therefore, we would need a region center-specific strategy to deal with those gangs. The National Commissioner has alluded earlier, Chairperson, that in our fight to reduce the abuse of other offenders, those that are vulnerable, we would need facilities like your CMAX and your SuperMAX. Gang leaders, once identified, regions then submit requests to the branch in head office so that these gang leaders are then taken out of the areas where they operate and sent to some of these facilities that are clearly aimed to deal with gangsterism. Also, importantly, within the Office of the National Commissioner, as he has also alluded in the presentation, we have appointed a chief security officer who is working directly with the director management of information systems, primarily to obtain intelligence reporting and to analyze and come up with a plan of addressing the prevalence of gang in our facilities. We must indicate, Chairperson, at this point in time that we are having good results, but still, gangsterism is taking place in our facilities, and it therefore needs then from us as a department to once more again have a real look at this framework that we're having and how we are trying to deal with it. Our ability would therefore then, Chairperson, need them to be informed about right by what is taking place at our correctional centers level.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Thanks. We'll come back to you, Mr. Tuff.
Yeah. Well, it speaks to a certain degree of analysis paralysis here, because we all know that it happens, and I hear what is being said about a framework, but what we would then need to know is what are the time frames for implementation, how many gang leaders have been identified, how many people have been transferred to high security centers, so that we actually get on top of it. And it comes back to the point that you, Chair, raised about the CCTV. Unless we all know that very, very little patrolling takes place after hours, very little because of all sorts of human resources constraints. So in the absence of that, I would support your call for a CCTV camera so that we can actually get on top of gang safety. Because unless we know what's going on inside those cells, we won't know what we're dealing with. We won't know what framework to put in place in order to deal with an anti-gang strategy. May I then just go on to zero tolerance, which is also an important part.
Before you do that, Baba, before you respond, Mr. South has asked for the time frame. He's asked for how many people have been identified and shipped, according to what you are saying to us. We don't expect you to give us those responses now. Cindy, please list them so that it can come to us at some point. Carry on, Mr. South.
And the presentation talks about a zero tolerance approach. Just in terms of the people identified in terms of Jolly, there are 902 of them identified. 67 in total were dismissed. 67 out of 902. 217 officials have subsequently left or died or resigned or whatever the case might be. It talks about the contravention of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act and the necessity to report people who contravene that. Again, how many? In what centers? Where did this happen? One saw the report in here of the upgrade of the Pretoria CMAX facility. A couple of years ago, there was a high-profile escape from Pretoria CMAX. And unless once the department is able to come and give us feedback about exactly what type of sanctions were taken against which officials, over what period, because I agree with your point that, you know, some of these things have taken 10 years to conclude, the claim of zero tolerance, I'm afraid, falls on very, very barren ground. So I'd like the department's comment on that.
Thank you, Mr. Self, and the department respond again. Because of time constraints, we can be very brief. We will always visit these things as long as we're around. But your response, sir?
Chair, there are questions that we would like to respond and not be left hanging. On the question of identification of gang leaders, we want to report here that just in August, this unit led by the Chief Security Officer identified 27 gang members from Barberton. They've all been sent to Kokstad. With respect to when is the implementation, when do we finish the strategy, it's a continuum. Bear in mind that we're coming from a low base. And it is important that when you create a structure, you want it to be able to give credence to what it's doing. Intelligence work has to take place. What led to the identification of this 27 is precisely because a core of people are working around this issue. So I'm able to give you the time frame as to when this is. It's a continuum. We're dealing with 243 facilities, and therefore the stretch strategy is that it must also line up with what you said, zero tolerance. But the gang strategy will only work as and when we're able to get fruit out of what we do. So it's a continuum. We identify, investigate, and when it is confirmed, these are the gang leaders, we deal with them. We can confirm this in writing to the portfolio committee. These have been removed out of the system. With respect to the box that matter, we want to report here the official has been dismissed. And it's something that we don't want to have hanging so that we respond on issues that are already belated. This matter, as we find them, Chairperson, we deal with them effectively. So the issue of zero tolerance, Mr. Self, is a constant. It's something that we want to achieve. It's like a mirage. There's no way we can say we have zero. It's a challenge that we want to attain. And therefore, as we skill, as we train, for example, the team that deals with security and intelligence is going for a training course with NIA, the police, and defense in the next 2 weeks. So it's a process that we need also to train our people. This type of institutions were not existent in our organization. And as the Jolly Commission lifted these things up, it drew our attention to some of these matters that we need to deal with them expeditiously.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the presentation. Chair, I think that the challenge that the department has is the implementation. They can come with a nice presentation in front of us, but nothing that has been implemented. My question, Chair, is the question in terms of the commission. It was also recommended that the first-time offenders, when admitted in our correctional centre, need to be separated, need to stay together or separated from those who have been arrested already. My question, Chair, is that is it that happening? Because when we go to oversight, we find that nothing is happening. We find that they mix them with the old people that are inside in the center, then seem that they can graduate all these things, Oyama gang and whatever. I won't touch the issue of the gang chair because I have to write to go to another meeting. I'll touch what other members that didn't touch. Except on the slide 14, on overcrowding. Bullet 2, it says an independent task team established. When is this independent task team chair going to come to this committee and give us a report? Because this overcrowding, we have experienced it when we go to oversight. That in the, our centers, you'll find that overcrowding is on our waiting line, and the challenge that is there is that is people that they've got a 300 rand a day that they can't afford. That's why I said there's no implementation, and when we go there at Mthatha, Mr. Breakfast, we're having that judicial that was there. Then he gave us that information that they are opening their hands to work with the correctional service. But the challenge that they're facing, there's no list that he has given to him that can assist in terms of those inmates that have been arrested, that doesn't afford to pay 300 rand a day. So that's why I said there's no implementation, Commissioner, because if there is a solution of doing that, we're not going to find that overcrowding Mthatha as we have going there as this committee. Chairperson, another questions I'll just leave for other members because I had to go to another meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Before you go, let's get the responses around the categorization at admission, if somebody, and then the second one, this independent task team. We know that, again, overcrowding is not going to disappear, but this task team's initial findings, its initial recommendations, and its initial report, can we expect something like that as the committee?
Chairperson, thank you once more. In response to the Honourable Member, I'd like to state the following, Chairperson. In the question that Mr. Self asked about the Inmate Protection Plan, which also seeks to address the plight of first-time offenders because of their vulnerability, the Department has developed a plan to address that problem and challenge. And the heads of centers where this did happen, the person has been taken through a course of identifying these vulnerable groups and also making sure that we are in a position then to assist in their incarceration. We are here referring to the department's plan of making sure that at each and every region we have a facility that will be able to incarcerate all of those first-time offenders. Now, with the backlog that we have with regard to accommodation and the fact that most of our facilities, especially at your bigger institutions, are overcrowded as a result of remandees, those that are waiting time, the implementation of that plan, Chairperson, has not found its way fully to the extent that any facility has been identified to incarcerate only first-time offenders. Therefore, heads of centers have been instructed to identify units in their facilities where these first-time offenders could be incarcerated in, ensuring their safety and ensuring also the fact that they are not mixed with these hardcore offenders. And I can assure this portfolio committee that in the majority of our regions, the same is taking place where first-time offenders have been identified and been detained separated to hardcore offenders. The issue raised on overcrowding, Chairperson, I must state that it is not a correctional services matter only, especially with regard to remandees, awaiting trial detainees. The JTCS cluster, together with the correctional services chairperson, have developed an 8-point strategy that deals with the overcrowding of awaiting trial detainees. I can indicate to this portfolio committee as we speak, chairperson, that at the beginning of last year when this committee came into place, the overcrowding levels of awaiting trial detainees were in the region of 50,000. As we speak...
And Chairperson Modis.
Yes, sir.
Now, let me help you on the fun of overcrowding. You know, we've beaten this thing to death. Even last week we spoke to it. So, no, don't bother going into that, because we know there's plans, we know there's those things. I think what the member is saying around all our plans, at some point we must stop consulting and start managing. I think that's the message we're sending. Stop consulting, start managing. And the first way you're going to manage, sir, is you've indicated to us that, for instance, around the categorization, you've sent this communicate to RCs. Send that communicate to us so that when we pick it up, we are able to say, head office on the 10th sent this to you. You have not complied. Is it because you're unwilling or unable to, and so that we can recommend corrective actions on those people? Let's stop planning. Let's start implementing. I think that's the message. And we're going to assist you. Any communique that goes to the region, submit it to us, because we go to regions as well. I think that's the point that was being made on those ones. But around overcrowding, we sympathize with you that really, it is not your problem alone, but I just think we must start working on those things. Do you want to respond to something on that, sir? We don't want to belabor these things. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Chair. I wanted to express a sentiment that we would like to request the committee to give us an opportunity. I should think in most cases we are being unfairly criticized. And I should think I need to say this, especially on this issue of overcrowding, because it has become so much of a topical issue. And that we are not implementing, I should think it is not fair. And I need to say this as a national commissioner, that all measures are put in place where this team, because it has an imperative of creating a negative perspective, because it's a cluster issue, because in the main, when you look at the numbers that are affecting overcrowding, the ATDs, as Commissioner Modise has indicated. And measures in place to look into diversions, electronic monitoring, and a host of other issues that we have raised with the committee. And it's not going to be a simple resolution from day one to day two. I should think we're trying our best. And therefore, with the support that we get from the portfolio committee, if we agree on the timeline, because we're in our APCs, especially the ones that were given in the cluster, we are saying we want to reduce of the number of ATDs in our facility from 150 to 120 days. And this is a target that we've put and committed ourselves to. So it's a cluster issue. And therefore, we need also to look in terms of what the police are doing and how we deal with this matter as a collective. And Chairperson, I'm saying, with all the humility and ability that we need to do, it's something that we have not taken our attention away from it. It's something that we know it affects us, because it deals with the issues of new prisons. Are we building new facilities? Is that the panacea? Is it a question of violations? The brain protocol? Those are measures that are in place. Where in the CDC has also issued an instruction wherein we need to train our officials to look, as Manuel has indicated, are we dealing with the script that is available to us to deal with it? So if there is a time frame that we need to communicate to yourselves as to when do you hope that we'll see this process bearing fruit. Thank you, Chair.
All right. We'll get to you there. Let us try and put this one specifically to bed. Overcrowding, we are now accepting, is a cluster effort. We're not going to hammer you on that anymore. What we are going to hammer you on, in terms of overcrowding, is where we find an inmate that has got a 300 rand bail, and you have done nothing as correctional services.
because that is your responsibility. Everything else we are accepting, and I will not encourage our members to hammer you on overcrowding again, because indeed it is everybody that gets this, must take it, it's their role. But certainly, in terms of the bail protocol, you have a direct obligation to identify and take them back to the magistrate's court. We'll continue to hammer you on that one, where we pick it up. So I'm hoping in that way we'll reach a truce in terms of us not hammering you only around overcrowding, except for that instance. Do you want to talk on overcrowding, Bob?
Chairperson, thank you very much for responding like that. I was going to say to the commissioner, I think it was unfortunate that maybe he didn't understand Mamwenya's response or question on the matter. I think the way we have responded now, we have just closed the door for me to ask him, because I'm really frustrated, because you see, if a magistrate says that I'm sitting in my office and I'm waiting for the DCS to bring those people to us so that we reduce their numbers in there, then we find it strange when the commissioner says that they are being criticized unfairly. Now, who is criticizing other ones unfairly? Is it us? Or is it the magistrate? Or is it them criticizing each other? Who is criticizing each other? Because we find it very difficult. We are individually here. We are trying to assist by raising these issues. It's not that we are fighting with them. We are raising this issue in a very humanly possible way of saying, how can we help? But there are things that can be done by this person. I find it very strange if the commissioner says we are criticizing them. We have to say anything about it.
No, Ivan, don't continue. We have closed it by saying that we will support you where other sister departments must play a role. Where you have a direct responsibility, we are going to do what Baba Ndlovu is saying, unapologetically. Unapologetically, we will come to you and say, Baba, breakfast, you have 480-something the last time we were there. Mamgwenya is going in September. If there's 400 people, rest assured that we are going to raise it. We are giving you that. We are going in October. Rest assured that we will recommend corrective measures in St. Albans and Amtata. That is how we'll operate going forward. And hopefully we will kill this thing. Not kill it physically, but see by. Father Abraham, you want to have a follow-up story before that? This time, I'm going.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, lastly, on the issue of discipline, we're still waiting for the reply in terms of the members that have killed the brother of Kanyisa inside in the center. It's falling under the senior mechanism and also Mary Bode. How far is this case? Is that case? And who are those members? And what happened about those members that have killed Kanyisa's brother? Thank you.
So department will give us report back in due time, because we raised it also with the minister last week, and the minister indicated that must be dealt with expeditiously. So
after this meeting, we'll give the committee the report.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, in the presentation, it was indicated that the Jali recommendation that Supermax prisons be built further, that is not accepted by the department. But on the other hand, Mr. Modi says...
Let me pick that one up. Mr. Dali said that the supermaxes are inhumane and they should be closed down. That's what Dali was saying. The department saying we don't agree with Dali. So it's the other way around.
Thank you, sir, for correcting. Chairperson, but I note that Mr. Modi says that gang leaders are identified and they are then sent to supermax prisons. My concern here, Chairperson, is the awaiting trial detainee, who is also subjected to some or other form of abuse by gangsters. What is the department doing about them? Secondly, Chairperson, Jali recommended that officials of the department need to be sensitized in dealing with rape survivors, and that they be given some of other form of assistance, and that some officials be trained in order to do just that. Has that happened? And if so, with what results?
Hold it, otherwise you lose the others, we'll come back to the rest. Otherwise they'll answer only some and not all. Can somebody talk about the gang strategy in remand detention facilities and the training of officials specifically in relation to rape?
Thank you, Chairperson. The awaiting trial detainees, Chairperson, gang leader. We are very fortunate in the area of remand detainees, as we're working very closely with the South African Police Services, that gang leaders are identified, and as we speak, we have transferred quite a number of them to our supermax in Kokstad, including Mr. Bongani Moyo. The intelligence fraternity, Chairperson, assists us in a great deal, especially with organized crime. And therefore, gang leaders, we are able to identify. We have not succeeded in some areas because of the fact that the information we received came very late. But where information is received timely, the department is acting on those cases. I need to indicate that with regard to the treatment of rape survivors, Chairperson, at each and every correctional facility, we have an official that has been trained. Mostly they are those that are working in our hospitals to deal with rape survivors. There is a treatment program that these people have to go through. But importantly, Chairperson, is the fact that all manners of rape are reported criminally and investigated by the South African Police Services as well as correctional services officials. And the protection of these victims, Chairperson, is receiving our 100% attention by separating them and keeping them in those areas where their safety can be guaranteed. The other issue that we want to report is when, in compliance to the Sex Offenders Act, Chairperson, the department has also a signature to that, is taking all of the areas very seriously, and we are complying with the Sex Offenders Act in as far as it regards incidents of rape in our facility. Thank you.
Mr. Abram, do you have any follow-ups on the rape and on the training? Do you have any follow-ups? If you don't, Mr. South wants to have a follow-up. Can I allow him, and then you'll have your second? Okay, Mr. South.
Thank you very much indeed, Chair. I just want to get clarity about awaiting trial gangsters, okay? So here you have, you're in the regional court in Wynberg, and somebody gets convicted or remanded. They go down into the remand cells, they get put back into a truck, and they go back to Polesmore. What steps does Polesmore management take to remove the American gang leader from vulnerable first-time offenders who have been picked up for shoplifting? What steps take place to protect those people who are in the latter category? Practical steps.
Chairperson, what normally happens once these offenders are admitted at our facility, we have a database of all known gang leaders and gangs. Our officials have been taken through the identification of signs and of tattoos that are on the offenders. So on admission, in the presence of a qualified nurse, the offender is searched. All marks on his body are put on the admission register as well. And the head of the center is then informed that here we have the leader of the Americans, and they then get in touch with the national office, the regional office, and national office, where the speedy removal of that offender from other vulnerable groups is ensured. As I have said, Chairperson, we have had quite a lot of success in this regard at the time of getting the information. Other gang leaders, some of these gangs are not operational in our facilities. We only get to hear about them later, and it is then where we have a problem. But all gangs operating in correctional facilities, we are able to identify them immediately.
Chairperson, I've got one more question and then just a question, a little comment. Chairperson, Jali also recommended that the department should consider the feasibility and the cost of electronic monitoring, also of inmates who are the movement of inmates within the centre, as well as those that are released on parole for whatever reasons. Has that happened? Has the department considered the option? Because I did not hear that they have turned that particular recommendation down. And then, Chairperson, my comment. Chairperson, it concerns me that originally when I looked at the screen in front of me, I saw a response that was to be made in August 2011 on the Jali report or commission's recommendations, and that was for the NETCO, I take it the department's NETMENCO, National Management Committee. Then, Chairperson, we were told by Ms. Kreiner that after Baban Drobu questioned the veracity of the slides on the screen vis-a-vis the hard copy. We were told though, but there were two or three that preceded them. But you see, Chairperson, the trouble here is that we were unable to sing from the same page. Because for argument's sake, on their slide number 17, the information provided, although the heading was different, is on our slide number 14 on the hard copy. Now, Chairperson, this raises a problem. Now, I have hammered this time and time over and over again. When a Department of State appears before a parliamentary committee or any other statutory body, we expect the information that they provide us to be of integrity, that we do not question its veracity. I'm unfortunately placed in a position, Chairperson, where I question the integrity of the information that has been provided. And the commissioner has said quite correctly, he seeks guidance and support from the committee, and I'm really trying to guide and support. Chairperson, you know, that confusion has taken place. The fact that there was a wrong slide here originally, now I don't know whether it was cut and paste and that one has been utilized, and unfortunately the heading was wrong, they then had to change it and bring something else here. That's not the way we expect the department to operate. I therefore, Chairperson, have great doubts to accept the integrity of the information that has been provided. Whether some things were kept away from us, and kept in place for some other body, I don't know. It creates a great doubt in my mind. And I hope that this sort of thing is not repeated again in future. Thank you, Chair. Finally, Chair, these documents that were delivered yesterday. Now, you know, this is how thick these documents were. And many of us did not receive them last night here because we didn't come here last night. Apparently they were in the pigeonholes. I picked it up in the morning. But Chairperson, we are not empowered adequately to be able to interact with the department when these things are left here a couple of hours before a meeting. That also has to change, Chairperson. Thank you.
All right. Let's deal with electronic monitoring, because I know we discussed it last week. We know that you guys are in Brazil. We know that it's now something that must take place, Mr. Abraham. Ours is just to make sure that it does take place sooner than later. We really want to cut on time. If there's anything else you want to talk on electronic monitoring, talk about it. But then, yeah, Mr. Abraham's comments, I hope you are taking to heart. But is there anything on electronic monitoring that you want to add to it?
Thanks, Chair. I want to re-emphasize and confirm that the comments made by Honorable Abraham have been taken with the whole humility. And certainly, we don't want to come back here on the same issue, and we'll improve on this. On the electronic monitoring, I would like to deal on this because it's something that is in the public domain and the department is dealing with it. We will be briefing leaders tomorrow, on Friday, so it's something that we don't want to talk about because we'll be preempting the processes. So it's a process that we were involved in. We will be implementing, subject to all the processes being followed by our procurement and identification of the stakeholders. Thanks, Chair.
Hello. Thank you, Jefferson. Because of time constraint, are there still challenges on vetting processes? If the answer is yes and no, what are the those challenges? The second one, Jefferson, is Resolution 24 of 1997. It puts the dates and time. If the department is able to implement those dates and time, if the answer is yes and no, it's just a simple yes and no. The last one is the 217 officials that have resigned, defeated, or whatever. Have they identified, have you identified those officials? What has happened to them? Thanks.
Yep. Yeah. Anybody? Vetting, Resolution 24, and the deceased and those, what has happened to them? I assume Baba Ndlovu was raising it in the context that they owed the state money. Is there anything that you've done, or if you said he's died, that's it? Are we taking from his estate? What are we doing? I think that's the context in which he's raising the deceased one. But vetting Resolution 24 and the deceased that owe the state money.
Chairperson, let me deal briefly with Resolution 24 of 1997. That resolution was superseded by the review of the disciplinary code in 2006. So it is no longer an issue for us. We've extended the time period in the disciplinary code of 2006.
Chairperson, on vetting, yes or no? Yes, we are vetting, but not to the extent to which our members are vetted across the organization. We have challenges. Challenges are that this is a cluster matter. It has been elevated to a cluster decision, where in the meeting we discussed that we need to put a strategy of vetting all security-related departments in a manner that meets the criteria. So from an internal perspective, we are doing it, but it's at a very, very low level. But it is a concern that we worried about, Chairperson. Thank you.
On those that have deceased, your slide says deceased official of 93 Metco, and we're assuming that it was because of some sort of mal something in Metco. Now you're taking money from those that are alive. These that have deceased, have we written off the debt? What is the state? That's the question that is being asked. 93 of them.
Chairperson, those who is late after they signed the admission of debt would be recovered from the pension money. In cases where they haven't signed an AOD and was deceased prior to that, the SIU is recovering civilly from them by the Office of the State Attorney.
No, ask him if you want to.
Can you repeat the last sentence? The last sentence?
Chairperson, what I'm saying is the admission of debt has been paid over to the Special Investigation Unit. In cases where the person has not signed an AOD, it's deceased prior to that, in that case, the SIU will instruct the State Attorney's Office to institute a claim against the estate of that deceased person.
How many are those?
Chairperson, I only have got a number, the 207 that's been mentioned in the presentation. The overall figure is 217, but I don't know in which cases there will be a claim instituted or in which cases it will be recovered from the pension money. The principle is that even if he's deceased or she's deceased and he signed an admission of death or something, we're recouping those money. So death doesn't dissolve you from repaying the stake. I think that's the question that Mr. Is that the... Yeah. All right, now. Any more? Oh, thank you so much. Mamyanda?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out, because in the Jali Commission, they say involvement of official in promoting the gangsterism activities. It's a serious offense. How did they deal with that one? That is my first question. My second question is that of five officials, they are officers for a long time. It's not saying long time, it's 3 weeks, 2 years, 5 years, because this recommendation is from that side of 2009, something like that. I just want to find out how long are they sick? Are they still alive or dead? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. The information is actually requested for the breakdown of the sick leave, and it was provided, and it can still be provided to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
We don't have it here, but you send it to us. Especially those that are for long, according to your slide 14 or whatever it is. The second one, are you going to talk to them on officials and gangs?
Chairperson, yes. In the identified areas where these officials were found to have been operating with offenders, they have been found guilty, others have been dismissed, and others have resigned. What we are doing currently is to be on the lookout for any official reported or not reported, who is also members of these gangs. And the department is working frantically with all officials to root out this culture of gangsterism. Thank you.
Chairperson, my follow-up was going to go to the official website, but she said she will bring the information.
Advocate Max.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to ask the Commission with this introductory statement. The 5 years in correctional services since the demilitarization, it was total chaos according to the Jali Commission. Are you sure that your current system is sufficient to ensure that we are not going back to that particular level? Secondly, Chairperson, I'm totally in consensus with the Commission with a zero-tolerance approach to the abuse of power. My view is always when a person tries or her incapable best to make a mistake, you can be tolerant to that and to assist that individual. But whether there's abuse of power is a zero-tolerance approach. So what we actually experience with our oversight person is that a number of RCs, positions are vacant, and some of your CDCs are actually acting in RC positions as well. And a number of area commissioners also and other senior positions are vacant. And most of them is as a result of disciplinary action which was taken by your department. Are you sure that those disciplinary actions which you took comply with the Labor Relations Act with regard to substantial and procedural fairness? And are you sure that that type of action taken is not as a result of you people at this particular level also abuse power to get rid of those senior people? The reason why I'm asking is that it came to my attention that in certain instances where senior members were found not guilty, there was no reinstatement, and then the excuse has been used that there's a breakdown in the relationship and I think we must rather depart from each other in an amicable settlement manner. That is the one question, the code of conduct with of a code enforcement a unit which you've got. I just want to know, with regard to your delegated powers, how far down in your system, organization, is that code being delegated to ensure that commanders at the lowest level own that disciplinary code and own the fact that they have to comply or to oversee that discipline is being implemented and enforced. The last question, Chairperson.
They will lose them. You will come back to the last one. Let's deal with these first, follow up, and then you'll raise your next one. The demilitarization, is it effective? The dismissals, are they in line with labor relations? And are you at the senior level not also guilty of firing people, asking them to leave, and abuse your power? And then the code enforcement, up to which level or how deep does it go in terms of ownership?
Chairperson, thank you very much. The first one will be answered by both myself and Mr. Modisa. Let me take the response in this first instance. On demilitarization, the department will not go back to a militarized position, precisely because of the abuse that we saw in the process of a militarized organization as us. It has its own historical and political connotations in this context. We are saying that the processes, procedures, and policies that are in place are adequate to provide us with leadership. We don't need to militarize in order for us to have a command and control structure in the manner that we deserve. We don't want to go back to the dark days as to when that institution was at that level, there were problems. We want to have an organization that takes care of its inmates in the manner in which we have been mandated for. Mr. Modisa will take it further and then we'll answer the question of power. I'll answer the question of abuse of power. I'll respond also on the issues of vacancies in the manner at which the member has requested the responses. Thanks, Mr.
Chairperson, thank you very much, members of parliament. I would like to respond additional to what the National Commissioner said of the era from which we come from, where we are today and what we would like to have in future. Chairperson, myself and some senior officials who were in correctional services during those days of the Jali Commission, some of whom are here, others in management areas where they are working, can attest to the fact that during that time there was chaos in this department. There was rampant unionism. You don't belong to a union, you would get absolutely nothing, no recognition. People were marginalized because of the fact that they did not have any senior positions or any friends in the union. There was also, Chairperson, a whole lot of cronyism, positions for pals, for friends, for family members, girlfriends included. Now, and girlfriends. Chairperson, because some of us spoke out on this state of our affairs, we are able to say now, at this point in time, that this department has improved vastly to the department that was there during the Jali Commission, in terms of management, in terms of accountability. But I think importantly, Chairperson, is the recognition that offenders are human beings that need to be treated properly, in particular paying emphasis on their rehabilitation.
During those days, Chairperson, it was lockdown and throw the key away. Nothing that assisted us to rehabilitate those offenders. As we speak now, I think, Chairperson, we are on the right track. And the colleagues who were there can also attest to that. But importantly, there is accountability in this department. And with the leadership that we have, I'm very much positive that we are going on the right track. We will see to it that at the end, Chairperson, this department complies with what the people of South Africa expect of it. To be in charge, but to ensure that those that are in our care are rehabilitated and come out as law-abiding citizens. We are not there, Chairperson, as we speak, but that is the direction that we have taken. Thank you.
Chairperson, to assist on the issue of the Code of Conduct and Code Enforcement Unit, I just want to ensure that we've got clarity. The Code Enforcement Unit is a centralized institution based in the National Office to deal with the disciplinary matters flowing out of serious maladministration, fraud, and corruption. The Code of Conduct is something that binds every single member of the department, and that cascades right the way through management and right the way through down to every last official within the department. The line functional responsibilities of management to ensure compliance with the Code of Conduct is a line functional managerial function. The issue of discipline is a managerial line functional responsibility. So what we've done is to create a capacity to investigate fraud, corruption, and serious maladministration at a national office level, at a centralized level, precisely because of the risk of decentralized investigations being corrupted because you're investigating the person that works in the next door office. So that is part of the approach of the anti-corruption strategy, is to lift up that investigative and disciplinary process. But normal misconduct processes are managerial line functional responsibilities. I hope that that can draw the distinction between the Code Enforcement Unit and the Code of Conduct.
We're 10 minutes over our time, Commissioner, so you will allow you to respond, because we then want Mr. Mack to do a follow-up if he has, and then we've got Claire, but can we just be cognizant of time so that we are out of here?
Abuse of power, Chairperson, I should think we have said no. This organization will comply with the principles that are applicable in the law. And in the instance where we find people abusing their power and it's brought our attention, we'll act. On the issue of disciplinary actions being taken according to the law, as far as we're concerned, we comply with the law and we take people for disciplinary process through the process that are eligible in the conduct, in the code of the organization. We have not had a situation under my leadership wherein somebody has not been charged and is reinstated because we fail to do so. In the event, we have not even had a case where somebody is told to walk, but we deal with the matter effectively until its logical conclusion. We are not an organization based on vendetta and personalities, and I would like to believe if that situation arises and brought to our attention, we'll deal with it expeditiously. Thanks.
My last question, with regards to this status, the misconduct matters, I see that 93 of the 93 of those people with regards to the METCO fraud died. Did they die while they were members still of DCS? And secondly, what is crime? Is crime? Whether you are with the department or resign or on pension, what is the status of the criminal investigation which you people instituted against those officials?
Chairperson, I don't have at my fingertips exactly which of the 93 died, when they were either members of the department or whether they'd resigned. If that information is required, we can certainly give you a breakdown of the 93. I think in terms of the criminal investigations, we had indicated that those that had not signed an acknowledgement of debt had then been criminally charged,
and that they have been found not guilty in the court, and we are therefore waiting for the results of that to then be able to study that to determine what needs to be taken further. I'm not sure if there's an addition that needs to be added to.
Jefferson, actually, initially all 702 members involved in the Metco fraud were given over to police. The Scorpions, or then Scorpions, investigated the matter, and they still busy with the criminal processes as relating to those who already signed AODs in the matter.
Not really happy, but let us continue.
Thanks, and thanks for the presentation. Slide 10. We talk of AODs. I just want to find out if it is the policy of the department that if you have corrupted the department or defrauded the department, you are given this privilege of an AOD. That's one. Number two is on slide 12. The issue of involvement of officials in promoting gangsterism. We heard the department saying that there are gang leaders that have been transferred to other centers. In the case of the officials, what have we done and how many of them that are involved in promoting gangsterism? Lastly, the recruitment agencies that you talked about. Do we have the HR in our DCS? And what is it doing in terms of recruiting whoever? Because we are a bit worried of using these agencies as this committee itself.
Jefferson, just in terms of the admission of debts that have been signed, firstly, I must say, in any case of theft of corruption, there's a recovery of the money that's been lost to the state. In these particular cases, there were difficulties and challenges that we have since this fraud, red cross fraud, was committed between 1997 and 2001. So there was quite a long delay in this matter. The issue was also the involvement of quite a number of members, like we said, 702, in basically two management areas, Pietermaritzburg and Durban. So in terms of the process at that time, is that there was quite a delay in instituting the disciplinary processes because of the fact that it happened long ago. So the strategy at that time with the Scorpions was also that there would be a suspended sentence be imposed in the criminal court on basis that the person signed an admission of debt. And therefore the department at that time issued a final written warning, and the member must sign the admission of debt at that time.
The question is, what is the policy now? Is this AOD still the current policy? If I do something wrong, can I admit to it and say I'm going to pay you back and then I'm absolved? That's the question that he's asking.
Okay. Chairperson, it's not a policy. We've also got a zero tolerance policy against corruption and fraud. That is also by the nature of this particular case in itself.
Chairperson, a very difficult response for a difficult question. I'm trying to find an appropriate response, but that is not skating away from when the committee went to Kimberley. The report that we got from the oversight is that there was a member who is a member of the gang. And the RC then, Mr. Modise, who subsequently became acting CDC Corrections, was tasked to deal with this matter. In our investigation, done independently by him and the team, because we don't know the name of the person, we could not find a member. But when we deal with gangs, and in the event our official is a member of a gang, it is going to become very difficult unless somebody within
in the gang within prison informs that he is a member. Or there's a whistleblower within our organization that says, Wada so-and-so is a member. But what I'm trying to say here, Chairperson, that in the event we discover that a member of our senior management or is a member of correctional cell is a gang member, that is a dismissible offense. Today, as we speak, I have no recollection of a situation where he was dismissed, an official of correctional services belonging to a member, to being a gang member. I should think that would be a fair response in relation to this. But it is a matter of concern if we understand that they are members, but we have not been able to have our finger in the pulse to be able to pinpoint that official X, Y, and Z are members. In that instance, if that happens and it comes to our attention, those members will be dismissed. Because you cannot have an official of correctional services serving the interest of the gangs that are incarcerated in our facility. It will be a contradiction. And it will also create public insecurity because you cannot take care of humans while you yourself are serving the aims and objectives of gangs in our facility. That's how I would like to approach this. But certainly, Chair, it's something that we're grappling with. In all fairness and honesty, this leadership team here, it's something that included in the CSO, the Chief Security Officer. Part of his mandate is also to listen and find out as to whether we have members who are members of correctional services being gang members. That's part of the brief.
What we are saying to you is that if we pick up any of your officials who are on the payroll of a gang, you know, of course, we are saying that to you, senior manager. If we pick up anybody who is on the payroll of a gang, we will fire you. So I think that's the message that we are sending. Because yes, nobody's going to admit and say, I belong to the 26s or so on. But we have ways of picking up some of you that are on the payroll of gangs. And we will deal with that matter. I think that's the message that we are sending to you. Mr. Rasarov, you want to say something?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Just to quickly respond on the issue of agents, recruitment agents. Ideally, as an organization, we're not supposed to be going that route. However, I need to mention that, and I think we made mention of this problem some couple of months ago. We've admitted as an organization that there are chronic challenges in the branch that manages human resources. And it's historical. It doesn't start now. There's a challenge in terms of the caliber and the quality of people who are constituting that branch. Because indeed those people are not HR practitioners. Almost we did a quick analysis. 90% of those people are people who have actually worked in the correctional centers, trained as correctional officers, but for some reason they ended up in human resources. So if you want to talk about a professional human resource management, it doesn't exist, and it hasn't existed. So one of the things that we are saying is that there's a process that has started to identify that, and there's a plan that says that we need to start having a way in which we move the people to where they belong, and we come up with a robust strategy of bringing on board professional HR practitioners. That is one. But the second issue as well is that for us to be able to recruit and deal with the challenges of lack of staff, we need to be able to mitigate the natural attrition. As an organization, we have almost an attrition of 100 officials leaving our system on a monthly basis. So even if we come up with, I mean, for the past 3 or 4 months, we've been really trying very hard to try and fill vacant positions robustly. But because of people leave our system, we are just not making any mark. We appoint 120 people per month, 100 of them get out of the system. So it becomes the biggest challenge. So hence the decision that says that while we're dealing with these current challenges, there's actually a need for us to have additional capacity in the form of a professional recruitment agency that will be able to deal with the capacity challenges we have. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Can we allow the department closing remarks 3 minutes?
Thank you, Chair, for the robust discussion, debate, questions that were pointed. We sincerely thank the direction with which this meeting gave us an understanding of the challenges that we have as an organization. And certainly we'll be able to improve on a continuous basis. Chair, before we close, I would like to announce that amongst us, we have new members who have joined us, who have taken leadership position. We have Ms. Precious Khumalo. She joined the department on the 1st of August. She's a Deputy Commissioner, Communications. I also want to announce that we have Ms. Gugu Lembete. She joined us on the 1st of August as Deputy Commissioner, HRM. And also acting as CDC Corporate Services. Chairperson, as we develop and walk this path of transformation of Department of Correctional Services, we will always and all the time looking upon to yourself for guidance, assistance, so that we should not falter on things that we are supposed to be doing. And certainly the Jalo Commission listed a number of things which we were not able to deal with appropriately, but certainly we are able now to speak with all the confidence that as and when some of these issues need our attention, we certainly will give them due attention. And we want to thank your indulgence on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Just one thing from our side. Is it possible for your department, or let's put it differently, we'd like your department to give us a status report of all the investigations that are outstanding. We kept on talking about investigations that the SIU are still doing. Can you give us a report that says these are the investigations that are outstanding and so on? If you could follow that up with the SIU and give them to us? From the Dalek, no, this, from this thing of yours. Remember this slide of yours, you had indicated there were some outstanding. If you can just give us a status report on that as a first step. Others we will deal with them later. So if you could give us that in writing, and then from our side, we are hoping that this painful chapter that was characterized by the Dalek Commission's findings is buried today. We're talking about the chapter. But as we've all agreed that there are certain things that are going to be with us forever and certain things that we must deal with, I don't want to be referring to the Dalek Commission's report anymore, but I'll certainly refer to gangsterism. I'll certainly refer to corruption. So that this boogeyman called the Dalek Commission's report doesn't continue to keep us back. I think we must be forward-looking, all of us. We will continue to look at the issues that were raised in the Dalek Commission report and ask you to account on them. In that regard, we want to hopefully put that part of it to bed, Commissioner. From our side, we are saying to you and to everybody that cares to listen, as Baba Ndlovu has said, that we are not going to be apologetic about the nature of our interactions with you, about our impatience when we think that you're not listening to us. I spoke to the commissioner today and I've given a commissioner a letter because since we've started operating in the fashion that we operate as this committee, South Africans are almost looking to us to solve the problem. They come to us and they say, you know what, we've raised this thing with you, Mr. Self, as if we do the day-to-day management in these areas. So we are saying that we pick up as much frustration as you pick up. And people begin to wonder, is this committee serious? If we go out, we say, give it to us and we'll make sure this will happen. So we're not going to be apologetic about our frustrations, especially where we've asked you to do something and you have not either come back to us or come back to the people. So we're asking you to do that because it's now become a real activist committee, this committee. A real activist committee. Everybody phones us at all times and we will hammer you on that one. And I think the last thing that I want to say I am really going to find it difficult not to ask for a resolution if Mr. Abraham ever has to raise legitimately the issue that he's raised today. He has raised them on numerous occasions. The quality of the information we get, but also the timing. We cannot get reports on Monday night and have an intelligent engagement on Wednesday, because members of parliament come to work on Tuesday. Monday is in their constituency. So if you send it on Monday, Ms. Schreiner, chances are we're only going to pick it up on Wednesday morning. And really, really, it is not fair. So it's the quality, and it's also the timing. We have requested that it gets to at least 7 days. If you give it us 5 days, nobody's going to complain. But you can't give it us 24 hours before we meet. So the next time that thing is raised legitimately by any of our members, I think we're going to have a problem. I think we're going to have a problem, because then it becomes a farce. So our request to all of you, please improve the quality and improve the timeliness in which you send these reports to us so that we can have an engagement. On those words, thank you very much. We are nice people. When we fight with you, it's not because we don't like you. We love you. Okay? We think it's a threat.